4. Clay ran toward the barn with Rory right behind him. He paused to flip a switch, flooding the interior with bright light. The gray mare in the center stall continued to neigh and thrash around. Rory found it astonishing that the walls had remained intact. The noise of the animal's pain echoed through the stable, reflected by the rising anxiety of the other horses. Clay took one look at the mare and released a low groan, then muttered something under his breath. "What's wrong?" Rory cried.
"It seems Star Bright is about to become a mother."
"But why isn't she in one of the foaling stalls?"
"Because two different vets palpated her and said she wasn't in foal."
"But
she's already had 6 foals and her stomach's so stretched she looks pregnant even when she isn't."
Clay opened the stall door and entered. Rory's hand flew to her heart. Good grief, he could get killed in there. "What do you want me to do?" she said. Clay shook his head.
"This is no place for you. Get back to the house and stay there."
His brow furrowed, every line a testament to his hard, outdoor life. "But shouldn't I be phoning a vet?"
"It's too late for that."
"Boiling water. I could get that for you." She wanted to help. She just had no idea how.
"Boiling water," he repeated. "What the hell would I need that for?"
"I don't know," she confessed with a shrug. "But they always seem to need it in the movies." Clay gave an exasperated sigh.
"Rory, please, just go to the house."
She made it all the way to the barn door, then abruptly turned back. If anyone had asked why she felt it so necessary to remain with Clay, she wouldn't have been able to answer. But something kept her there, something far stronger than the threat of Clay's temper. She marched to the center stall, her head and shoulders held stiff and straight. She stood with her feet braced, prepared for an argument. "Clay," she said, "I'm not leaving."
"Listen, Rory, you're a city girl. This isn't going to be pretty."
"I'm a woman, too. The sight of a little blood isn't enough to make me faint." Clay was doing his best to calm the frightened mare, but without much success. The tension in the air seemed to crackle like static electricity.
"I haven't got time to argue with you," he said through clenched teeth.
"Good." Starbright heaved her neck backward and gave a deep groan that seemed to reverberate in the stall like the boom of a cannon. "Poor little mother," Rory whispered in a soothing voice. Led by instinct, she carefully unlatched the stall door and slipped inside. Clay sent her a look hot enough to peel paint.
"Get out of here before you get hurt."
His voice was low and urgent. Starbright reacted to his tension immediately, jerking about, her body twitching convulsively. One of her hooves caught Clay in the forearm, and almost immediately, blood seeped through his sleeve. Rory bit her lip to suppress a cry of alarm, but if Clay felt any pain, he didn't show it.
"Hold her head," Clay said sharply.
Somehow, Rory found the courage to do as he asked. Starbright groaned once more, and her pleading eyes looked directly into Rory's, seeming to beg for help. The mare's lips pulled back from her teeth as she flailed her head to and fro, shaking Rory in the process. "Whoa, girl," Rory said softly, gaining control. "It's painful, isn't it? But soon you'll have a beautiful baby to show off to the world."
"Foal,"
Clay corrected from behind the mare. "A beautiful foal." Rory stroked the sweat-dampened neck, doing what she could to reassure the frightened horse.
"Keep talking to her," Clay whispered.
Rory kept up a running dialogue for several tense minutes, but there was only so much she could find to say on such short acquaintance. When she ran out of ideas, she started to sing in a soft, lilting voice. She began with lullabies her mother had once sung to her, then followed those with a few childhood ditties. Her singing lasted only minutes, but Rory's lungs felt close to collapse. Suddenly, the mare's water broke. Clay wasn't saying much, but he began to work quickly, although she couldn't see what he was doing. Starbright tossed her neck in the final throes of birth, and Rory watched, fascinated, as two hooves and front legs emerged, followed by a white nose. The mare lifted her head, eager to see. Clay tugged gently, and within seconds the foal was free. Rory's heart pounded like a locomotive struggling up a steep hill as Clay's strong hands completed the task. "A filly," he announced, a smile lighting his face. He reached for a rag and wiped his hands and arms. Starbright turned her head to view her offspring. "See," Rory told the mare, her eyes moist with relief. "Didn't I tell you it would all be worth it?" The mare nickered. Her newborn filly was gray, like her mother, and finely marked with white streaks on her nose, mane, and tail. Rory was touched to her very soul by the sight. Tears blurred her vision and ran down her flushed cheeks. She blotted them with her sleeve so Clay couldn't see them, and silently chided herself for being such a sentimental fool. It was almost another hour before they left Starbright's stall. The mare, who stood guard over her long-legged baby, seemed content and utterly pleased with herself. As they prepared to leave, Rory whispered in her ear. "What was that all about?" Clay wanted to know, latching the stall door. "I just told her she'd done a good job." "That she did," Clay whispered. A moment later, he added, "And so did you, Rory. I was grateful for your help." Once more, tears sprang to her eyes. She responded with a nod, unable to trust her voice. Her heart was racing with exhilaration. She couldn't remember a time she'd felt more excited. It was well past midnight, but she'd never felt less sleepy. "Rory?" He was staring at her, his eyes bright with concern. She owed him an explanation, although she couldn't fully explain this sudden burst of emotion. "It was so beautiful." She brushed the hair from her face and smiled up at him, hoping he wouldn't think she was just a foolish city girl. She wasn't sure why it mattered, but she doubted that any man had seen her looking worse, although Rory was well aware that she didn't possess a classic beauty. She was usually referred to as cute, with her slightly turned-up nose and dark brown eyes. "I understand." He walked to the sink against the barn's opposite wall and busily washed his hands, then splashed water on his face. When he'd finished, Rory handed him a towel hanging on a nearby hook. "Thanks." "I don't know how to describe it," she said, after a fruitless effort to find the words to explain all the feeling that had surged up inside her. "It's the same for me every time I witness a birth," Clay told her. He looked at her then, and gently touched her face, letting his finger glide along her jaw. All the world went still as his eyes caressed hers. There was a primitive wonder in the experience of birth, a wonder that struck deep within the soul. For the first time, Rory understood this, and sharing it with Clay seemed to intensify the attraction she already felt for him. During that brief time in the stall, just before Starbright delivered her foal, Rory had felt closer to Clay than she ever had to any other man. It was as though her heart had taken flight and joined his in a moment of sheer challenge and joy. That was a silly, romantic thought, she realized, but it seemed so incredible to her that she could feel anything this strong for a man she'd known for mere hours. "I've got a name for her," Clay said, hanging up the towel. "What do you think of Night Song?"
"Night Song," Rory repeated softly. "I like it."
"In honor of the woman who sang to her mother." Rory nodded as emotion clogged her throat.
"Does this mean I did all right for a city slicker?"
"You did more than all right."
"Thanks for not sending me away. I probably would have gone if you'd insisted." They left the barn, and Clay draped his arm across her shoulders as though he'd been doing it for years. Rory was grateful for his touch because somehow
It helped ground the unfamiliar feelings and sensations. As they strolled across the yard, she noticed that the sky was filled with 1,000 glittering stars, brighter than any she'd ever seen in the city. She paused mid-step to gaze up at them. Clay's quiet voice didn't dispel the serenity.
"It's a lovely night, isn't it?"
Rory wanted to hold on to each exquisite minute and make it last a lifetime. A nod was all she could manage as she reminded herself that this time with Clay was about to end. They would walk into the house, and Clay would probably thank her again. Then she'd climb the stairs to her room, and that would be all there was.
"How about some coffee?" he asked once they'd entered the kitchen. Blue left his rug and wandered over to Clay. "The way I feel now, it would be a waste of time to go to bed."
"Me too." Rory leaped at the suggestion, pleased that he wanted to delay their parting too. And when she did return to her room, she knew the adrenaline in her system would make sleep impossible anyway. Clay was reaching up for the canister of coffee when Rory suddenly noticed the bloodstain on his sleeve and remembered Starbright's kick.
"Clay, you need to take care of that cut."
From the surprised way he glanced at his arm, she guessed that he too had forgotten about the injury.
"Yes, I suppose I should."
Then he calmly returned to his task.
"Let me clean it for you,"
Rory offered, joining him at the kitchen counter.
"If you like."
He led her into the bathroom down the hall and took a variety of medical supplies from the cabinet above the sink.
"Do you want to do it here or in the kitchen?"
"Here is fine."
Clay sat on the edge of the bath and unfastened the cuff, then rolled back his sleeve.
"Oh, Clay," Rory whispered when she saw the angry, torn flesh just above his elbow. Gently, her fingers tested the edges, wondering if he needed stitches. He winced slightly at her probing fingers.
"Sorry."
"Just put some antiseptic on it and it'll be all right."
"But this is really deep. You should probably have a doctor look at it."
"Rory, I'm as tough as old leather. This kind of thing happens all the time. I'll recover."
"I don't doubt that," she said primly.
"Then put on a bandage and be done with it."
"But
I've been injured often enough to know when a cut needs a doctor's attention."
She hesitated, then conceded that he was probably right. She filled the sink with warm tap water and took care to clean the wound thoroughly. All the while, Rory was conscious of Clay's eyes moving over her face, solemnly perusing the chin-length dark brown hair and the big dark eyes that, judging by a glance in the mirror, still displayed a hint of vulnerability. She was tall, almost 5'8", her figure willowy. But if Clay found anything attractive about her, he didn't mention it. Her throat muscles squeezed shut, and although she was grateful for the silence between them, it confused her.
"You missed your vocation," he told her as she rinsed the bloody cloth. "You should have been a nurse."
"I toyed with the idea when I was 10, but decided I liked books better." His shoulders were tense, Rory noted, and she tried to be as gentle as possible. A muscle leaped in his jaw. "Am I hurting you?"
"No,"
he answered, his voice curt.
After that, he was an excellent patient. He didn't complain when she dabbed on the antiseptic, although she was sure it must have stung like crazy. He cooperated when she wrapped the gauze around his arm, lifting and lowering it when she asked him to. The silence continued as she secured the bandage with adhesive tape. Rory had the feeling that he wanted to escape the close confines of the bathroom as quickly as possible.
"I hope that stays." He stood up and flexed his elbow a couple of times.
"It's fine. You do good work."
"I'm glad you think so."
"The coffee's probably ready by now."
He spoke quickly, as if eager to be gone. She sighed.
"I could use a cup."
She put the medical supplies neatly back inside the cabinet while Clay returned to the kitchen. Rory could smell the freshly made coffee even before she entered the room. He was leaning against the counter, sipping a cup of the fragrant coffee, waiting for her. "It's been quite a night, hasn't it?" she murmured, adding cream and sugar to the mug he'd poured for her. A certain tension hung in the air, and Rory couldn't explain or understand it. Only 10 minutes earlier, they'd walked across the yard, spellbound by the stars, and Clay had laid his arm across her shoulders. He'd smiled down on her so tenderly. Now he looked as if he couldn't wait to get away from her.
"Have I done anything wrong?" she asked outright.
"Rory, no." He set his mug aside and gripped her shoulders with both hands. "There's something so intimate and earthy in what we shared." His eyes were intense, strangely darker. "Wanting you this way isn't right."
Rory felt a tremor work through him as he lifted his hands to her face. His calloused thumbs lightly caressed her cheeks.
"I feel like I've known you all my life," he whispered hoarsely, his expression uncertain.
"It's been the same for me, from the moment you stepped out of the truck." Clay smiled, and Rory thought her knees would melt. She put her coffee down, and as soon as she did, Clay eased her into his arms, his hands on her shoulders. Her heart stopped, then jolted back to frenzied life.
"I'm going to kiss you."
He made the statement almost a question. "Yes," she whispered, letting him know she'd welcome his touch. Her stomach fluttered as he slowly lowered his mouth to hers. Rory had never wanted a man's kiss more. His moist lips glided over hers in a series of gentle explorations. He drew her closer until their bodies were pressed tight.
"Oh, Rory," he breathed,
dragging his mouth from hers.
"You taste so good. I was afraid of that."
His mouth found the pulse in her throat and lingered there. "This afternoon, I thought I'd cry when the car broke down, and now I'm glad, so glad," she said. He kissed her again, nibbling on her lower lip, gently drawing it between his teeth. Rory could hardly breathe. Her heart was pounding so hard. She slumped against him, delighting in the rise and fall of his broad chest. His hands moved down her back with slow restraint, but paused when he reached the curve of her hips. He tensed.
"I think we should say goodnight."
A protest sprang to her lips, but before she could voice it, Clay said,
"Now."
She looked at him, dazed. The last thing she wanted to do was leave him. "What about my coffee?"
"That was just an excuse, and we both know it."
Rory said nothing. The silence between them seemed to throb for endless minutes. "Good night, Clay," she finally whispered. She broke away, but his hand caught her fingers, and with a groan he pulled her back into his arms.
"What the hell?" he muttered fiercely. "Sending you upstairs isn't going to help. Nothing's going to change."
His words brought confusion, but Rory didn't question him, didn't want to. What she longed for was the warmth and security she'd discovered in his arms.
"Come on,"
he whispered, after he'd kissed her once more. He led her through the living room and outside to the porch, where the swing moved gently in the night breeze. Rory sat beside him, and he wrapped his arm around her. She nestled her head against his shoulder, savoring these precious moments. "I'll never forget this night."
"Neither will I," Clay promised, kissing her again.
Rory awoke when the sun settled on her face and refused to leave her alone. Keeping her eyes closed, she smiled contentedly, basking in the memory of her night with Clay. They'd sat on the swing and talked for hours,
talked and kissed and laughed and touched. Sitting up, Rory raised her hands high above her head and stretched, arching her spine. She looked at her watch on the nightstand and was shocked to see that it was after 11. By the time she'd climbed the stairs for bed, the sky had been dappled with faint shreds of light. She suspected Clay hadn't even bothered to sleep. Tossing aside the blankets, Rory slid to the floor, anxious to shower and dress. Anxious to see him again. 15 minutes later, she was on her way down the stairs. Mary, who was dusting in the living room, nodded when she saw Rory. Then the housekeeper resumed her task, but not before she'd muttered something about how city folks were prone to sleeping their lives away.
"Good morning, Mary," Rory greeted her cheerfully.
"Morning.
Where is everyone?"
"Where they ought to be this time of day. Working?"
"Yes, I know, but where?"
"Outside." Rory had trouble hiding her smile. "I heard about you helping last night," Mary added gruffly. "Seems you did all right for a city girl."
"Thank you, Mary. You don't do half bad for a country girl either." The housekeeper seemed uncomfortable with the praise, despite the lightness of Rory's tone.
"I suppose you want me to cook you some fancy breakfast."
"Good heavens, no, you're busy. I'll just make myself some toast."
"That's hardly enough to fill a growing girl," Mary complained.
"It'll suit me fine." Once her toast was ready, Rory carried it outside. If she couldn't find Clay, she wanted to check on Night Song.
"Rory!"
She turned to discover Skip walking toward her in animated conversation with a blonde. His girlfriend, she guessed. He waved and Rory returned the gesture, smiling. The sun was glorious and the day held marvelous promise.
"I didn't think you were ever going to wake up," Skip said.
"I'm sorry. I don't usually sleep this late."
"Clay told me how you helped him deliver Starbright's filly. You could have knocked me over with a feather when I heard."
Rory nodded, her heart warming with the memory. "Well, I tried to get you up. It would have been easier to wake a dead man than to get you out of bed last night." Skip looked slightly embarrassed.
"Sorry about that. But I generally don't wake up too easily once I'm asleep."
As he spoke, he slipped his arm around the blonde girl's shoulders.
"Rory, I want you to meet Kate Logan."
"Hello, Kate." Rory held out a hand, and Kate shook it politely.
"Hello, Rory," she said. "Clay and Skip told me about your car troubles. I hope everything turns out all right for you."
"I'm sure it will. Do you live around here?" Rory already knew she was going to like her. At a closer glance, she saw that Kate was older than she'd first assumed, maybe her own age, which gave credence to Skip's comment about liking older, more mature women.
"I don't live far," Kate said. "The Circle L is down the road, only a few miles from here."
"She's going to be living with us in the near future," Skip put in, gazing fondly at Kate.
The young woman's cheeks reddened and she smiled shyly.
"Oh?"
Skip couldn't possibly mean he planned to marry her, Rory thought. Good heavens, he was still in high school. He must have seen Rory's puzzled frown and hurried to explain.
"Not me," he said with a short laugh. "Kate is Clay's fiance."
5.
"You and Clay are engaged," Rory murmured as shockwaves coursed through her blood. They stopped with a thud at her heart and spread out in ripples of dismay.
Somehow Rory managed a smile, her outward composure unbroken. She was even able to offer her congratulations. To all appearances, nothing was wrong. No one would have known that those few simple words had destroyed a night she'd planned to treasure all her life.
"I hope you and Clay will be very happy," Rory said, and she meant it.
She'd just been introduced to Kate Logan, but already Rory knew that this sweet, friendly woman was exactly the kind of wife a man like Clay would need.
Skip's rushing things a little, Kate pointed out, but the glint of love in her eyes contradicted her words. Clay hasn't even given me an engagement ring yet.
But you and Clay have been talking about getting married, haven't you? Skip pressed. And you're crazy about him.
Kate blushed prettily. I've loved Clay from the time I was in fifth grade. I wrote his name all over my books. Of course, Clay wouldn't have anything to do with me. Not when he was a big, important high schooler and I was just the pesky little girl next door. It took a while for him to notice me. Like 10 years. She gave a small laugh. We've been dating steadily for the past two.
But you and Clay are going to get married, right?
Skip continued, clearly wanting to prove his point. Eventually, but we haven't set a date. Although I'm sure it'll be soon, Kate answered, casting a sharp look at Rory. The tightness that had gripped Rory's throat eased, and she struggled to keep her smile intact. It was impossible not to like Kate, but that didn't lessen the ache in Rory's heart.
The wedding's inevitable, Skip said offhandedly. So I wasn't exaggerating when I said you were Clay's fiancée, now was I?
Kate smiled. I suppose not. We love each other and have for years. We're just waiting for the right time. Her eyes held Rory's, assessing her, but she didn't seem worried about competition. Rory supposed she should be pleased about that, at least.
I was taking Kate over to see Night Song, Skip explained to Rory.
I actually came to Elk Run to meet you, the other woman said. Clay stopped by last night and told me about your car. I felt terrible for you. Your whole vacation's been ruined. You must be awfully upset.
These things happen, Rory said with a shrug. Being upset isn't going to ship that part any faster. All I can do is accept the facts.
Kate nodded sympathetically. Skip was about to show me the filly. You'll come with us, won't you? Rory nodded, unable to excuse herself without sounding rude.
If there'd been a way, she would have retreated, wanting only to lick her wounds in private. Instead, hoping she sounded more enthusiastic than she felt, she mumbled, I was headed in that direction myself. Skip led the way to the barn, which was alive with activity.
Clay had explained that Elk Run employed 5 men full-time, none of whom lived on the premises. 2 men mucking out stalls paused when Skip and the women entered the building. Skip introduced Rory, and they touched the tips of their hats in greeting.
I don't understand, Clay, Skip said as they approached the mayor's stall. When we bought Star Bright a few years back, all Clay could do was complain about that silly name. He even talked about getting her registration changed.
Starbright's a perfectly good name, Kate insisted, her sunny blue eyes intent on the newborn foal. Night Song was standing now on knobby, skinny legs that threatened to buckle, greedily feasting from her mother. Oh, she really is lovely, isn't she? Kate whispered. Rory hadn't been able to stop looking at the filly from the moment they'd reached the stall. Finished with her breakfast, Night Song gazed around, fascinated by everything she surveyed. She returned Rory's look, not vacantly, but as though she recognized the woman who'd been there at her birth. Rory couldn't even identify all the emotions she suddenly felt. Some of these feelings were so new she couldn't put a name to them, but they gripped her heart and squeezed tight.
What I can't understand, Skip muttered, is why Clay would go and call her Night Song when he hates the name Star Bright. It doesn't sound like anything he'd ever come up with on his own, yet he says he did.
I know, Kate agreed, but I'm glad, because the name suits her, she sighed. Clay's always been so practical when it comes to names for his horses, but Night Song has such a romantic flavor, don't you think?
Skip chuckled. You know what Clay thinks about romance, and that makes it even more confusing. But Night Song she is, and she's bound to bring us a pretty penny in a year or two. Her father was a Polish Arabian, and with Star Bright's bloodlines, Night Song will command big bucks as a national show horse. Skip.
Clay's curt voice interrupted them. He strode from the arena leading a bay mare. The horse's coat gleamed with sweat, turning its color the shade of an oak leaf in autumn. One of the stablemen approached to take the reins. Then Clay removed his hat, wiping his brow with his forearm, and Rory noticed the now grimy bandage she'd applied last night. No, this morning. She stared hungrily at his sun-bronzed face, a face that revealed more than a hint of impatience. The lines around his mouth were etched deep with poorly disguised regrets. Rory recognized them, even if the others didn't. Clay stopped short when he saw Kate, his eyes narrowing.
Morning, Kate.
Hello, Clay. Then his gaze moved, slowly and reluctantly, to Rory. The remorse she'd already sensed in him seemed unmistakable.
I hope you slept well, was all he said to her.
Fine. She detected a tautness along his jawline and decided he was probably concerned that she'd say or do something to embarrass him in front of his fiancée. Rory wouldn't, but not because she was worried about him. Her sense of fair play wouldn't allow her to hurt Kate, who so obviously adored this man.
We're just admiring Night Song, Kate explained, her expression tender as she smiled up at him.
I can't understand why you'd name her that, Skip said, his mouth twitching with barely suppressed laughter. You always pick names like Brutus and Firepower, but Night Song? I think you're going soft on us.
Considering himself particularly funny, Skip chuckled and added,
I suppose that's what love does to a man.
Kate's lashes brushed against the high arch of her cheek and she smiled, her pleasure so keen it was like a physical touch.
Didn't I ask you to water the horses several hours ago?
Clay asked in a tone that could have chipped rock.
Yes, but then kindly see to it. The farrier will be here any minute.
The humor left Skip's eyes. He was clearly upset by Clay's anger. He looked from his brother to the two women and then back at Clay again. Hot color rose into his neck and invaded his face.
All right, he muttered. Excuse me for living. Then he stormed out of the barn, slapping his hat against his thigh in an outburst of anger.
Kate waited until Skip was out of the barn. Clay, what's wrong?
He should have done what I told him long before now. Those horses in the pasture are thirsty because of his neglect.
I'm the one you should be angry with, not Skip. Kate's voice was contrite. I should never have stopped in without calling first, but I wanted to meet Rory.
You've only been here a few minutes,
Clay insisted, his anger in check now.
Skip had plenty of time to complete his chores before you arrived.
Rory tossed invisible daggers at Clay, annoyed with him for taking his irritation out on his younger brother. Skip had introduced her to Clay's fiancée. That was what really bothered him if he'd been willing to admit it, which he clearly wasn't.
We came here to see Night Song, Kate said again. I'm glad you named her that. No matter what Skip thinks.
She wrapped her arm around his waist and rested her head against his broad chest.
He was just teasing you, and you know how he loves to do that.
Clay gave her an absent smile, but his gaze settled with disturbing ease on Rory. She met his eyes boldly, denying the emotions churning furiously inside her. The plea for patience and understanding he sent to her was so obvious that Rory wondered how anyone seeing it wouldn't know what was happening. As though she'd suddenly remembered something, Kate dropped her arm and glanced hurriedly at her watch. She groaned.
I promised Dad I'd meet him for lunch today. He's getting together with the other town council members in one of those horribly boring meetings. He needs me as an excuse to get away.
She stopped abruptly, a chagrined expression on her face.
I guess that tells you how informal everything is in Nightingale, doesn't it, Rory?
The town seems to be doing very well. She didn't know if that was true or not, but it sounded polite. He just hates these things, but he likes the prestige of being a council member, something I tease him about.
I'll walk you to your car, Clay offered.
Oh, there's no need. You're busy. Besides, I wanted to talk to Rory and arrange to meet her tomorrow and show her around town. I certainly hope you remembered to invite her to the Grange dance tomorrow night. I'm sure Luke would be willing to escort her.
Oh, I couldn't possibly intrude, Rory blurted.
Nonsense. You'd be more than welcome. And don't worry about having the right kind of clothes for a square dance either, because I've got more outfits than I know what to do with. We're about the same size, Kate said, eyeing her. Perhaps you're a little taller, but not so much that you couldn't wear my skirts.
Rory smiled blandly, realizing it wouldn't do any good to decline the invitation. But good heavens, square dancing? Her?
Knowing you and Skip, Kate chastised Clay. Poor Rory will be stuck on Elk Run for the next 4 days, bored out of her mind. The least I can do is see that she's entertained.
That's thoughtful of you, Rory said. The sooner she got back on the road, the safer her heart would be. And if Kate Logan was willing to help her kill time, then all the better.
I thought I'd give you a tour of our little town in the morning, Kate went on. It's small, but the people are friendly.
I'd love to see Nightingale.
Clay!
The brusque voice of a farmhand interrupted them. Could you come here a minute? Clay turned to the man and nodded.
I have to find out what Don needs, he said quietly.
As he met Rory's eyes, a speculative look flashed into his own. She nearly flinched, wondering what emotion her face had betrayed. From the minute Clay had walked into the barn, she'd been careful to school her expression, not wanting him to read anything into her words or actions. She'd tried to look cool and unconcerned, as if the night they'd shared had never happened.
You two will have to excuse me.
Weary amusement turned up the corners of his mouth, and Rory realized he'd readily seen through her guise.
Of course, Kate said. I'll see you later, sweetheart.
Clay nodded abruptly and departed with firm, purposeful strides. Kate started walking toward the yard. Rory followed, eager to escape the barn and all the memories associated with it.
Clay told us you're a librarian, Kate said, when she reached the Ford parked in the curving driveway. If you want, I can take you to our library. We built a new one last year, and we're rather proud of it. I know it's small compared to where you probably work, but I think you'd like what we've done.
I'd love to see it. Libraries were often the heart of a community, and if the citizens of Nightingale had seen fit to upgrade theirs, it was apparent they shared Rory's love of books.
I'll pick you up around 10 tomorrow, if that's convenient.
That'd be fine.
Plan on spending the afternoon with me, and we'll meet Clay and Skip at the dance later.
Rory agreed, although her enthusiasm was decidedly low. The last thing she wanted was to be at some social event with Clay. Never mind how Dan would tease her if he ever discovered she'd spent part of her vacation square dancing with the folks at the Grange.
Bye for now, Kate said.
Bye, Rory murmured, waving. She stood in the yard until Kate's car was out of sight. Not sure what else to do, she wandered back into the house, where Mary was busy with preparations for lunch. Can I help? She asked. In response, Mary scurried to a drawer and once again handed her a peeler. Rory started carefully whittling away at a firm red apple she'd scooped from a large bowlful of them.
I don't suppose you know anything about cooking, Mary demanded, pointing her own peeler at Rory.
I've managed to keep from starving for the last few years, she retorted idly. The merest hint of amusement flashed into the older woman's weathered face.
If I was judging your talents in the kitchen on looks alone, I think you'd starve a man to death within a week.
Despite her glum spirits, Rory laughed,
If you're telling me you think I'm thin, watch out, Mary, because I'm likely to throw my arms around your neck and kiss you.
The other woman threw her a grin. Several peaceful minutes passed while they peeled apple after apple.
I got a call from my sister, Mary said hesitantly, her eyes darting to Rory, then back to her task. She's coming to Riversdale and wants to know if I can drive over and see her. She's only going to be in Oregon one day.
This was the most Mary had said to Rory since her arrival. It pleased her that the older woman was lowering her guard and extending a friendly hand.
I'd like to visit with my sister.
I certainly think you should.
It took Rory another minute to figure out where Mary was heading with this meandering conversation. Then suddenly she understood.
Oh, you're looking for someone to do the cooking while you're away.
Mary shrugged as if it didn't concern her one way or the other.
Just for the evening meal, two nights from now. I could manage lunch for the hands before I leave. It's supper I'm worried about. There's only Clay and Skip who need to be fed. The other men go home in the evenings.
Well, relax, because I'm sure I can manage one dinner without killing off the menfolk.
You're sure?
Mary was so completely serious that Rory laughed outright.
Since my abilities do seem to worry you, how would you feel if I invited Kate Logan over to help?
Mary nodded and sighed.
I'd rest easier.
Rory stayed in the kitchen until the lunch dishes had been put away. Mary thanked her for helping, then went home to watch her daily soap operas. Feeling a little lost, Rory wandered outside and into the stable. Since Clay had already shown her the computer, she decided to spend the afternoon working in his office. The area was deserted, which went some distance toward reassuring her, but then she'd assumed it would be. From what she'd observed, a stud farm was a busy place, and Clay was bound to be occupied elsewhere. That suited Rory just fine. She hoped to avoid him as much as possible. In 3 days, she'd be out of his life, leaving hardly a trace, and that was the way she wanted it. Rory sat typing in data for about an hour before her neck and shoulders began to cramp. She paused, flexing her muscles, then rotated her head to relieve the building tightness.
How long have you been here?
The rough male voice behind her startled Rory. Her hand flew to her heart and she expelled a shaky breath.
Clay, you frighten me.
How long? He repeated.
An hour or so. She glanced at her watch and nodded. Clay advanced a step toward her, his mouth a thin line of impatience.
I suppose you're looking for an apology.
Rory didn't answer. She'd learned not to expect anything from him.
I'll tell you right now that you're not going to get one,
he finished gruffly.
6. You don't owe me anything, Clay, Rory said, struggling to make her voice light.
Clay looked driven to the limits of exhaustion. Dark shadows had formed beneath his eyes, and fatigue lines fanned out from their corners. His shoulders sagged slightly, as if the weight he carried was more than he could bear. He studied her wearily, then turned away, stalking to the other side of the office. His shoulders heaved as he drew in a shuddering breath.
I know I should feel some regrets, but God help me, Rory, I don't.
Clay, listen.
He turned to face her then, and drove his fingers into his hair with such force, Rory winced.
I'd like to explain about Kate and me.
No. Under no circumstances did Rory want to listen to his explanations or excuses. She didn't have a lot of room to be judgmental herself. She had, after all, been dating a man steadily for the past few months.
Don't. Please, don't say anything. It isn't necessary.
He ignored her request.
Kate and I have known each other all our lives.
Clay, stop.
She pushed out the chair and stood up, wanting only to escape.
For the last 2 years, it's been understood by everyone around us that Kate and I would eventually get married. I didn't even question the right or wrong of it, just calmly accepted the fact. A man needs someone to share his life.
"Kate will make you a wonderful wife," she said, feeling both disillusioned and indignant, but she refused to let him know how much his indiscretion had hurt her. "If you owe anyone an apology, it's Kate, not me."
His responding frown was brooding and dark.
"I know." He drew his fingers across his eyes, and she could feel his exhaustion. "The last thing in the world I want is to hurt Kate."
"Then don't."
He stared at her, and Rory made herself send him a smile, although she feared it was more flippant than reassuring.
"There's no reason for Kate to find out. What good would it do? She'd only end up feeling betrayed. Last night was a tiny impropriety and best forgotten, don't you agree?"
Walking seemed to help, and Rory paced the office, her fingers brushing the stacks of books and papers on his cluttered desk.
"I don't know what's best anymore," Clay admitted quietly.
"I do," Rory said with unwavering confidence, still struggling to make light of the incident. "Think about it, Clay. We were alone together for hours. We shared something beautiful with Star Bright and her foal, and we shared a few stolen kisses under the stars. If anything's to blame, it's the moonlight. We're strangers, Clay. You don't know me, and I don't know you."
Afraid to look him directly in the eye, Rory lowered her gaze and waited, breathless, for his next words.
"So it was the moonlight?" His voice was hoarse and painfully raw.
"Of course," she lied. "What else could it have been?"
"Yes, what else could it have been?"
he echoed, then turned and walked out of the office. It suddenly seemed as though the room's light had dimmed. Rory felt so weak she sank into the chair, shocked by how deeply the encounter had disturbed her. Typing proved to be a distraction, and Rory left the office a couple of hours later with a feeling of accomplishment. She'd been able to enter several time-consuming pages of data into the computer. The routine work was a relief because it meant she had no time to think. The kitchen smelled of roasting beef and simmering apple crisp when Rory let herself in the back door. It was an oddly pleasant combination of scents. Mary was nowhere to be seen. While she thought of it, Rory reached for the telephone book and called the number listed for the garage in Riversdale.
"Hello," she said, when a gruff male voice answered. "This is Rory Campbell, the woman with the broken water pump, the one in Nightingale."
"Yeah, Miss Campbell, what can I do for you?"
"I just wanted to be sure there wasn't any problem in ordering the part. I don't know if Clay, Mr. Franklin, told you, but I'm more or less stuck here until the car's repaired. I'd like to get back on the road as soon as possible. I'm sure you understand."
"Lady, I can't make that pump come any faster than what it already is."
"Well, I just wanted to check that you'd been able to order one."
"It's on its way. At least that's what the guy in Los Angeles told me. They're shipping it by overnight freight to Portland. I've arranged for a man to pick it up the following day, but it's going to take him some time to get it to me."
"But that's only 3 days.
"He called too late yesterday for me to phone the order in. Lady, there's only so much I can do."
"I know. I'm sorry if I sound impatient."
"The whole world's impatient. Listen, I'll call you the minute it arrives," she sighed.
"Thanks. I'd appreciate it."
"Clay got your car here without a hitch, so don't worry about that. He saved you a bundle on towing charges. Shipping costs and long-distance phone bills are going to be plenty high, though."
Rory hadn't even noticed that Dan's shiny sports car wasn't in the yard where Skip had originally left it.
"So you'll be calling me within the next day or two?" she asked,
trying to hide the anxiety in her voice, and trying not to consider the state of her finances, already depleted by this disastrous vacation.
"Right, I'll call as soon as it comes in."
thank you. I appreciate it, she said again.
No problem, the mechanic muttered, obviously eager to end their conversation.
When the call was finished, Rory toyed with the idea of phoning Dan next. She'd been half expecting to hear from him since she'd left the Franklin's number with his secretary the day before. He hadn't phoned her back, but there was nothing new to tell him, so she decided not to call a second time. Hesitantly, Rory replaced the telephone receiver, pleased that everything was under control. Everything except her heart. Dinner that evening was a strained affair. If it hadn't been for Skip, who seemed oblivious to the tension between her and Clay, Rory didn't think she could have endured it. Clay hardly said a word throughout the meal, but Skip seemed more than eager to carry the conversation, and Rory did her best to lighten the mood, wondering all the time whether Clay saw through her facade.
While you're here, Rory, Skip said, with a sudden burst of enthusiasm, you should learn how to ride.
No, thank you, she said pointedly, holding up her hand, as though fending off the suggestion. An introduction to King and Hercules was as far as she was willing to go.
Rain magic would suit you nicely.
Rain magic?
That's a silly name Kate thought up, and Clay went along with it, Skip explained. He's gentle, but smart. The gelding, I mean, not Clay.
The younger Franklin laughed heartily at his own attempt at humor. Clay smiled, but Rory wasn't fooled. He hadn't been amused by the joke, nor, she suspected, was he pleased by the reference to Kate.
No thanks, Skip, she said, hoping to bring the subject to a close. I'm really not interested.
There, that said it plainly enough.
Are you afraid?
A little, she admitted truthfully. I prefer my horses on a merry-go-around. I'm a city girl, remember?
But even girls from San Francisco have been known to climb on the back of a horse. It'll be good for you, Rory. Trust me, it's time to broaden your horizons.
Thanks, but no thanks, she told him, emphasizing her point by biting down on a crisp carrot stick with a loud crunch.
Rory, I insist. You aren't going to get hurt. I wouldn't let that happen. And rain magic is as gentle as they come. In fact, he wiggled his eyebrows up and down, if you want, we can ride double until you feel more secure.
Rory laughed. Skip, honestly.
All right, you can ride alone and I'll lead you around in a circle. For as long as you want.
Rory shook her head and, amused at the mental picture that scenario presented, laughed again.
Leave it, Clay said with sudden sharpness. If Rory doesn't want to ride, drop it, okay?
Skip's shocked gaze flew from Rory to his brother.
I was just having fun, Clay.
His older brother gripped his water goblet so hard Rory thought the glass might shatter.
Enough is enough. She said she wasn't interested, and that should be the end of it.
The astounded look left Skip's features, but his eyes narrowed and he stiffened his shoulders in a display of righteous indignation.
What's with you, Clay? He shouted. You've been acting like a wounded bear all day, growling at everyone. Who made you king of the universe all of a sudden?
If you'll excuse me, I'll bring in the apple crisp, Rory said, and hurriedly rose to her feet, not wanting to be caught in the crossfire between the two brothers. Whatever they had to say wasn't meant for her ears. The exchange that followed ended quickly, Rory noted gratefully from inside the kitchen. Their voices were raised, and then there was a hush followed by laughter. Rory relaxed and picked up the dessert, carrying it into the dining room along with a carton of vanilla ice cream.
I apologize, Rory, Clay said soberly when she re-entered the room. Skip's right. I've been cross and unreasonable all day. I hope my sour mood hasn't ruined your dinner.
Of course not, she murmured, giving him a smile. Clay stood up to serve the dessert, spooning generous helpings of apple crisp and ice cream into each bowl. Skip chattered aimlessly, commenting on one subject and then bouncing to another without any logical connection, his thoughts darting this way and that.
What time are you going over to Kate's tonight? he casually asked Clay.
I won't be. She's got some meeting with the women's group from the Grange. They're decorating for the dance tomorrow night.
Now that you mention it, I seem to remember Kate saying something about being busy tonight. Without a pause, he turned to Rory.
You'll be coming, I hope. The Grange is putting on a square dance, the biggest one of the year, and they usually do it up good.
Kate already invited me. I'll be going with her, Rory explained, although she hadn't the slightest idea how to square dance. Generally, she enjoyed dancing, although she hadn't gone for several months because Dan wasn't keen on it.
You could drive there with us if you wanted, Skip offered. I'd kind of like to walk in there with you on my arm. You'd cause quite a stir with the men, especially Luke Rivers. He's the foreman at the Logan place. Most girls go all goo-goo-eyed over him.
Clay's spoon clanged loudly against the side of his glass dish, and he murmured an apology.
I'm sorry, Skip, Rory said gently. I told Kate I'd drive over with her.
Darn, Skip muttered. The meal was completed in silence. Once, when Rory happened to glance up, her eyes met Clay's. Her heart felt as though it might hammer its way out of her chest. She was oppressively aware of the chemistry between them. It simmered in Rory's veins, and she could tell that Clay felt everything she did. Throughout dinner, she'd been all too conscious of the swift, stolen glances Clay had sent in her direction. She'd sent a few of her own, though she'd tried hard not to. But it was impossible to be in the same room with this man and not react to him. 1,000 times in the next couple of hours, Rory told herself that everything would be fine as soon as she could leave. Life would return to normal then. When the dishes were finished, Skip challenged her to a game of cribbage, and grateful for the escape, Rory accepted. Skip sat with his back to his brother, and every time Rory played her hand, she found her eyes wandering across the room to where Clay sat reading. To all outward appearances, he was relaxed and comfortable, but she knew he felt as tense as she did. She knew he was equally aware of the electricity that sparked between them. Rory's fingers shook as she counted out her cards. 15-8, Skip corrected. You forgot 2 points. Her eyes fell to the extra 10, and she blinked.
I guess I did. Skip heaved a sigh.
I don't think your mind's on the game tonight.
I guess not, she admitted wryly. If you'll excuse me, I think I'll go up to bed.
She threw him an apologetic smile and reached for her coffee cup. Skip was right. Her mind hadn't been on the game at all. Instead, her thoughts had been on a man who owed his loyalties to another woman, a woman whose roots were intricately bound with his, a woman Rory had liked and respected from the moment they met. Feeling depressed, she bade the two men goodnight and carried her cup to the kitchen. Dutifully, she rinsed it out and set it beside the sink, but when she turned around, Clay was standing in the doorway, blocking her exit.
Where's Skip?
She asked a little breathlessly. Heat seemed to throb between them, and she retreated a step in a futile effort to escape.
He went upstairs.
She blinked and faked a yawn. I was headed in that direction myself. Clay buried one hand in his jeans pocket.
Do you know what happened tonight at dinner?
Not finding her voice, Rory shook her head.
I was jealous, he said from between clenched teeth. You were laughing and joking with Skip, and I wanted it to be me your eyes were shining for. Me, no one else.
He stopped abruptly and shook his head.
Jealous of a 17-year-old boy. I can't believe it myself.